Hey everybody, it's 6 past the hour, and this is Indirect Democracy. This week on Indirect Democracy, I'll be talking about the war in Iraq. In fact, I plan to discuss it in about 5 minutes. Plus, we are losing our free press. There's a global warming update, the president's horoscope. I discovered a new ad against Prop 87 and the What a Weenie Award. Well, welcome. Welcome to podcast number 9 of Indirect Democracy, found at www.indirectdemocracy.com. I'm your host. My name is David. I'm a proud member of the Progressive Podcast Network. Let's see. There's a lot to talk about and a lot to cover. So what we're going to do is just get into the global warming updates. And this one's an actually important update to get into, because in the very first episode of Indirect Democracy and in the Al Gore movie, reference is made to the repair of the ozone layer. And if you are keeping up with the news, this is from BBC. Ozone hole is biggest on record. Let's see. This year's Antarctic ozone hole is the largest on record, according to U.S. government scientists. The hole is a severe depletion of the ozone gas layer in the upper atmosphere that protects life on Earth by blocking ultraviolet rays from the sun. From September 21st through the 30th, its average area was 27.4 million square kilometers, or 10.6 million square miles, bigger than all of North America. It is caused mainly by human-produced compounds that release chlorine and bromine gases into the stratosphere. The Montreal Treaty was designed to protect the ozone layer by phasing out the production of chemicals such as chlorofluorocarbons, or CFCs, and spray can propellants responsible for ozone depletion. This was a particularly important story because, as I mentioned in the first podcast, and as it's mentioned in An Inconvenient Truth, the ozone layer actually has been reported as being able to heal itself. Now, this is important because now there's evidence that it isn't. But as the article continues to state, observations by ORA's microwave limb sounder shows extremely high levels of ozone destroying chlorine chemicals in the lower stratosphere. These high chlorine values covered by the entire Antarctic region in mid to late September. The high chlorine levels were accompanied by extremely low values of ozone. I'm getting to the point. The size and thickness of the ozone hole varies from year to year, becoming larger when temperatures are lower. Because of the international agreements banning ozone-depleting substances, researchers have calculated that these chemicals peaked in Antarctica in 2001 and have been declining. However, many of them have extremely long lifetimes once released into the air. While there are year-to-year variations, scientists expect a slow recovery of the ozone layer by 2065. So the point being is that, yes, the recovery will come. It's just going to take a little bit longer. It's something that can't obviously heal automatically, but it is starting to heal, and I think that's the more important point of what we're trying to get across. And it just goes to show that when governments get involved and people do what they can to start to stop using certain products, including the CFCs that were found in hairsprays, we can start to make a difference in our planet and with our world, especially with the ozone layer, because that obviously presents a ginormous threat to the planet. So that's our global warming update for today. And of course, beyond the global warming update, where would I be if I didn't give you the president's horoscope? Now, as always, I like to read these to you as I get to see them for the first time. So let's see, just going to make a quick adjustment here. And here is the president's horoscope. His meter reading is an 8 for the week of October 23rd through the 29th. And from the pages of Elle magazine, and of course, as we know, our president is a Cancer. If you work in a creative or sales capacity, this week has real promise, particularly before Friday. You're inspired and fired up, ready to aggressively pursue a venture that has some risk, but also enormous potential for riches and satisfaction. This is one week when you might get lucky against some pretty substantial odds. Once the weekend hits, Mercury goes retrograde until just after mid-November. During the retro phase, you'll pull back from the brink and refrain from giving everything you've got or risking it all to any one thing. Your creativity and ability to invent a better way of doing business will continue. You'll probably research, rehearse, and plan rather than take action. This week's touchstones are emerald and granite. Well, at least I know what those stones are. My goodness. But like I said, sometimes I think Al can be a little bit prescient, and sometimes I think it's just really missing what has to be done. Let's see. Going into the issue of civil rights, I found a particular interesting story. This is from Democracy Now, and it has to do with the loss of the effectiveness of our free press. So here's that clip I want to play.
Reporters Without Borders has released its fifth annual Worldwide Press Freedom Index. It shows the level of press freedom in the United States continues to fall. The 2002 U.S. was rated as having the 17th freest press. Now it's ranked 53rd. Reporters Without Borders criticized the Bush administration for using the so-called war on terror to crack down on press freedom. The report also criticized the United States for jailing journalists at home and abroad. Freelance journalist and blogger Josh Wolf remains in a San Francisco jail for refusing to hand over video to the police. Al Jazeera cameraman Samuel Haj has been locked up at Guantanamo for over 4 years. Associated Press photographer Bilal Hussein has been held in Iraq since April. Neither Al-Haj or Hussein have ever faced charges.
You know, I always get amazed whenever I think about our free press, because that's exactly what it's supposed to be, is the greatest free press in the whole world. And here we are, ranked 53rd. I don't know how that happened. I don't know when it happened. Maybe it had to do with the fairness doctrine and the conglomeration of media sources. I imagine that all played a part. But I think there's one other thing that's involved with it, and it's just pure laziness. You know, I was going to Cal State Fullerton back, and I'm trying not to date myself, but I'm going to anyway. When I was at Cal State, I went to a symposium where they had several journalists to gather together, and one of the students got up to ask a question of one of the actual big headline journalists, the type of anchor that you see on the air, and this was during the week that Lucille Ball died. And the student asked, why is it that everywhere we go, Lucille Ball is on TV for a whole week? She had just passed away. She was an American icon, but it was every day that she was on the air. And I will never forget the response from that journalist. The response was, because it was easy. That stuck with me my whole life, because that really is the point of it. We have to hold them, just like we have to hold other people, accountable for what they do. Because you cannot allow the news to become easy. Every chance you get, educate yourself as to what's going on. These podcasts and the Progressive Podcast Network are part of that, our tool that goes to that education. You also want to go to the net. If you pick up your local paper, I honestly suggest if you pick up the Times, the Tribune, whatever paper it is that you read, go to page A16 first. I always believe that you find the real news buried there in those little tidbits. But please look into finding the real news. And when they start to become too easy, when they start to make it that they don't want to do their job, hold them accountable. Start writing the editors. Let them know if you have a subscription. Let them know that you might cancel. Go to another paper. Start subscribing to papers like The Nation, other articles, other periodicals that will get you the real news, because it is our time to educate ourselves, because we cannot allow the press, our government, to be held unaccountable. Speaking of institutions that don't like to keep people unaccountable, I'd like to play you this promo from the Progressive Podcast Network.
All I'm saying is give peace a chance.
Wait. Up.
It's time to take to the street.
Mainstream media, where are you?
George W. Bush was born on third base but thinks he hit a triple.
WakeUpAM.blogspot.com.
All the oil men in the White House.
Rumsfeld's cronies, buddies, neocon pals.
What is wrong with this picture?
He just bypasses whatever's in the Constitution.
Just when we think it can't get any worse.
Fascist government. Dictatorship.
He's like the ultimate spoiled brat.
Wake up and smell the oil fields.
Remember who said
this
that.
Isn't health care. This is get sick and die care.
Mainstream media doesn't cover it, so that's why we're here.
Yeah, look for me at Gitmo. That's where I'll be.
And after September
11th. Playing the 9/11 card every time
again. American subject to eavesdropping.
These
illegally.
Actions are within the president's authority under the Constitution.
It's ridiculous.
The
law. What do they have to
do? It's poo-poo.
WakeUpAM.blogspot.com.
I dare anyone to call me a conspiracy theorist.
See, I wanted this week's podcast to focus on Iraq because no one issue will define this country for years, perhaps generations, the way Iraq has and will be. So I wanted to address as much of what has occurred in Iraq since March of 2003, but I sort of realized that that could take hours. So I decided to break down that history to less than 5 minutes. Now, that's not going to be the whole thing of what I'm going to talk about, and I planned on doing this, and I actually did it by the use of song. So I'm asking you to forgive this truly amateur take. I'm not a great singer. So if you send me any comments on how bad I sing, well, beat you to it. I know I suck. So here we go. Sing along. I'm pretty sure you know the tune. The words will be on the website.
Colin Powell shocking awe, Iraq, Marxism, anthrax, mushroom cloud, freedom's on the march. U.S.-led invasion, Iraqi liberation, Poland, Thailand, watch the statue fall. Massive looting has begun, Baptist army now is gone, Paul Bremer, CPA, and Hussein got away. Chalabi is the man, bribery in Jordan, landing on a carrier, mission accomplished banner. Joe Wilson, Valerie Plame, CIA and Yellow Cake, Peanut, Slam Dunk, intelligence was wrong. Loyalists and Fedayeen, Abu Musab, Zakawi, IEDs, RPGs, insurgents on the rise. Green Zone, bring them on, Iraqi oil fields are ours. Uday and Crusade on them all, Sodom in a spider hole. Ambush, mutilated retaliation, phosphorus, napalm, battle of Fallujah. Abu Ghraib, torture photos, interrogate, Halliburton, Black Star, no big contracts, private thighs, body armor, Humvee, backdoor jocks, no planning, contractors of blood of Christ, Donald Rumsfeld should resign. Parsons hired, billions gone, Al-Askari mafia's bomb, largest embassy in the world, purple fingers out to vote, Mosul, Tikrit, Haditha, Ishaki, Mumadiyah, Mukradeep, human rights don't matter, bleep. Hindi, Shia, noble cause, approval ratings start to fall, protest, disabled them, hack it as a Democrat, coalition withdraws, Lincoln propaganda, 4 hours of electric light, Congress won't do oversight, Maliki, Zakawi's dad, Iran, and Sharia law instead, 9-11, not Hussein, what else do I have to say? Fight them there or fight them here, administration using big terror broke, civil rights growing dead, adapt to it, Sodom's trial going bad, troops keep going back, Central Front is in Iraq, Osama's free in Pakistan, timetable cut and run, Sunni Shia out for blood, Ouattara won't fight, retired generals testify, civilian casualties only grow, Baker's plans are no go, stay the course on civil war, I can't take it anymore!
I'm leaving so long as I'm the president.
Well, I hope you forgive the very poor singing. It's always good to be a little bit irreverent, and I guess I had to be with that. So much to talk about, and it's easy to go over every possible fault. I thought about doing that, but realized it would take way too long. I'm probably going to stay focused a little bit later in the past few months, because the past few months in Iraq have been exceptionally fluid. But this past week, a friend of mine gave me a copy of Iraq for Sale, the new Bob Greenwald video, which is, I'll have the website available if you want to purchase the video, and I suggest it. Buy it, share it with your friends, because this is important information. And it made me realize one thing recently. I think it's time for us, as liberals, progressives, even conservatives, let's stop the conversation about the lies that got us into Iraq. I actually believe in those lies. This is not conspiracy thinking for me. I actually believe that we were lied into war, and there is evidence to prove it. The intelligence was never there. Nothing ever added up. Point per point, things never matched, that all of a sudden Iraq wasn't a threat, but was a threat. I think this was trying to finish old business and get in there. That's my opinion. I still remember that the day before the invasion began, I told a friend of mine that's it's like a dear mentor to me. I said to her, God forbid what happens, and I pray to God that he was right, because if he wasn't right, God help us all. But it got me thinking, especially after seeing Iraq for Sale, that maybe the better way to handle this conversation with anybody is not to focus so much on everything that led up to the war. And I know that's very hard, but maybe it's to take it from the start of the war on. Stay focused on that, because the beginning stuff automatically puts everybody on the defensive. But if you go from the point of the war and on, then all of a sudden everybody's on equal footing, and maybe our arguments can become a little bit more clear, because nobody can deny the facts of what's going on. And after seeing Iraq for Sale, I believe that the main focus of all of our arguments, at least the main focus of my argument, is going to be, is that this government has sold itself out. It sold us out. It sold out our military. How they have shifted everything to be privatized is shocking. And what I did, and I hope this will be okay with the people from Iraq for Sale, but I had to get some of these clips from Iraq for Sale to play, because it is just stunning. So what I'm going to do is play you some of what was in that particular film, so you could hear what they had to say. And what I'm going to do is, on occasion, if I want to cut in, of course, I'm going to pause and have a little bit of commentary, but I want you to hear some of these portions that I recorded for yourself.
I was getting really angry, I mean, especially because I knew that a lot of these prisoners that I saw with these injuries from abuse and torture really hadn't done anything. They weren't part of the insurgency. They were just picked up for no reason at all.
If you are a U.S. soldier and you hurt an Iraqi civilian and that becomes known, you will be court-martialed. But if you are a U.S. contractor and you kill an Iraqi civilian and that becomes known, you will be sent home. And then you can come back the following week and you can work for a different contractor.
Now, I find that actually amazing, because we are, if you sort of know and keep up with the history, a U.S. authorization, and I'll have the link up to the research pages of Indirect Democracy. Actually, there was a law passed by the United States that authorized contractors to be pretty much absolved of their crimes. So that isn't that far-reaching, in case you're hearing that for the first time. The United States absolved private citizens, and especially the contractors, of any crimes in Iraq. So that's a particularly telling statement. Here's some more.
So here we have the two ringleaders of abuse at Abu Ghraib very explicitly saying, in many cases, what was happening was they were being ordered to abuse these detainees by civilian contractors. These guys are in prison for 18 years total between the two of them, and there's no contractors in prison.
It was devastating because they took over my job. I ended up doing nothing. We had to train these KBR contractors how to fix these radios. we had to walk them through all the basic steps when I could be actively becoming a better soldier and becoming more proficient in my job instead of having to sit up on guard duty to wait around while KBR contractors are doing the job that I had to train them to do.
You know, I continue to never be shocked by the way that we outsource every possible job, including our military. I cannot believe this, that we spend time and money to train, it's like these men and women, to serve us, and what we end up doing is paying them to train others. Others who have no loyalty to this country, really, except for a paycheck. Now, I'm not trying to criticize the individual workers there, but I am talking about these companies, and other people will be more eloquent in how they have to criticize them. But I continue to be shocked by the way we allow outsourcing to take over this country. And what I'm going to do is actually play another clip real quickly, because I sort of want you to hear this. This is also about outsourcing. Just going off a little bit of the topic, but I was stunned to hear this particular piece of news the other day. Here it is.
Dodie Gilmore's been working on farms since she was little, but these days, walking around her 180 acres in Cato, Oklahoma, is an incredibly painful ordeal.
It's a struggle just getting through your daily chores.
She has arthritis in her right hip.
It's bone grating on bone. You're never out of pain. It's always a lot of pain.
But her insurance calls it a pre-existing condition and won't pay for hip surgery. Without insurance, the surgery can cost anywhere from $28,000 to $40,000. Neither Dodie nor the small real estate company she works for could afford that.
Even though we have great medical care here locally, it's still to the point that where if you have to pay for it out of your pocket, it's just almost unaffordable unless you have a pretty good little nest egg.
But now Dodie and her boss, Martin Van Meter, think they've found a way to take care of the problem. Dodie can get the surgery she needs for one-third the price if she goes to India to have the operation there.
We're kind of a family, and Dodie needs this help, and we're willing to help her if this is the only way that she can get the surgery that she needs.
So Martin worked out the bill with Planet Hospital, a firm that places patients overseas, for Dodie to get an operation called hip resurfacing in a hospital in New Delhi.
My HMO failed me. They denied my requests for hip resurfacing.
And apparently India sees taking in Americans desperate for low-cost, high-quality health care as a growth industry.
I'm on top of a construction crane in the city of Gurgaon. This is one facility of about a half dozen hospitals that are sprouting up just about a half hour away from the Delhi International Airport. That means that by the year 2010, there will be at least 2,000 more world-class beds at Indian prices.
So basically, we've gone and outsourced everything. That's what we're doing. For the almighty dollar, we have outsourced our military and our health care. I can't even imagine what's next. But here's some more from Iraq for Sale.
Across the board, people lost their jobs. Quartermaster companies, mechanic, any logistics soldiers were involved with, their jobs were outsourced to KBR.
If you don't know KBR, you'd have never been to Iraq. Because KBR is everywhere in Iraq.
You have hundreds, if not thousands, of these trucks driving north and south on these roads every day, bringing supplies to other military bases. Most of the people who were driving for Caleb Brown en route were foreign workers. They were from Pakistan and Nepal, India. Sometimes there would be Americans driving the trucks, U.S. civilians.
Halliburton and KBR had news from multiple sources, including multiple sources in the military, that the roads that day were under active combat operations and were black, closed, and or red. No civilians.
It's about contracts, I believe, fulfilling a contract and replacing us if we died. There's a lot of different contracts being offered out there, and Talibanaru wants most of them. If they could have them all, they would take them all. They wanted to continue doing business with the army, whatever the risks were.
It was nothing but the money. There's no duty, honor, country among anyone at Halliburton KBR.
In the case of Halliburton, most of the contracts they've received have been sole source contracts, which means they're either given the contract, it's just offered to them, or they're the only people that bid on it. A lot of federal officials will defend this, saying that this is the only company that can do the work.
Conservatives, especially, who favor a free market system, should be outraged about the degenerate state, the lack of competition in defense industry.
When we showed up, there's nothing there. Our customer is a private coming off patrol who wants midnight chow, and we're there for him.
We're doing stuff that you'll never read about in the papers.
Everyone had to make a big adjustment over there. I helped with that.
We got 80,000 troops out of the sand in 3 months. It was awesome.
I'm Ian Dolan.
Angela Steven.
Kirk Hansen.
My name is Jay Patterson, and I'm proud to work for Halliburton.
You know, one thing that they show, which, you know, I can't obviously show you because I don't have the pictures for this, but in that commercial, which was done by Halliburton, they talk about having meals ready, but plenty of the food was actually set aside that they have to go for scheduled feedings. And I don't mean to use the word feedings in a bad way, but scheduled, you know, meal times that left soldiers standing in line for an hour. And some of the pictures that came from there included leaving these guys basically as targets to get their food, and it's like be held out so insurgents could attack them. Some of these mess halls had were bullet-ridden. They've basically given the enemy a time schedule as to when to attack, and that to me is stunning. It's like, how much more can we put our men and women at risk? What was played before, in case you're not very familiar, is a discussion about Halliburton, Kellogg, Brown & Root and the no-bid contracts that they've gotten, and this is just plain out true. They've been able to get as many contracts as they want to handle the military reconstruction in Iraq, and they've done it without having to bid for it, which is way beyond the norm in what regular business would be. Dick Cheney, our current vice president, used to be CEO of Halliburton, and many people believe that that connection is why they've been able to get these no-bid contracts, which is, you know, frightening in a sense. Here's evidence showing that the connection is obviously there, but here's how Halliburton spends the money to take care of our fighting men and women.
My name's Ben Carter, and within the first week of being in Iraq, I knew that that wasn't going to be the company that I wanted to be with. Halliburton was hired to provide clean, safe cooking, cleaning, shower water for the military. One of Halliburton's employees saw something wiggling in the water in his toilet bowl, so I went and tested the water in our water storage tanks. There was no chlorine in them, none. The water we showered in every single day was extremely contaminated. And when I talk about contaminated water, I'm saying malaria, typhus, Giardia, Cryptosporidium. I mean, the list is really, really long. Of the 67 water treatment plants that Halliburton run, 63 of them weren't providing safe water. And the Marines are showering in it every single day. Sorry. I was there to help them. There's a lot of soldiers over there. They might come home without a bullet wound, but there's a lot of them that are going to come home with pathogens in their blood because of Halliburton. And they don't even know to get tested for it unless somebody tells them. And I'm sure Halliburton is not going to be the company to tell them.
You know, for me, this was probably the most angering part of the entire thing. And there's a lot of things to get really angry about. But exposing our soldiers to disease that they don't have to be exposed to because Halliburton's trying to save a buck is really, really infuriating. As an American, I am disgusted by what has occurred. And that's what all of this is about. Now, there's going to be some clips to talk about oversight, but I don't understand why it is that we do not have any oversight of what is occurring. It is essential. It is unforgivable to allow companies to profit off of the suffering and the fighting of our men and women. To not even say that it's okay to question what a private contractor is doing, a private contractor that we're paying with our tax dollars to take care of our men and women who we pay with our tax dollars, to not even say that we should have any oversight of them or to hold them accountable, which they're not being because of this law in Iraq, is frightening. And I don't understand why it is that when you say to anybody who's on the right, hey, this is where we're screwing up. We're allowing contractors to go in, take the jobs of Iraqis who could be having those jobs, who are actually keeping busy, instead of forming militias, by helping them to actually repair their own home. No, we're going to bring in outside contractors, allow them to go in without bidding on it whatsoever, and then it's like treat our men and women like garbage, overcharge the American people. And then if you think about it, and there's going to be more evidence about the amount of money that they waste, but what they're doing is that we have to train our men and women. That costs money. Our men and women train them, who we're already paying per contract. So we're now spending twice the amount of money to have Halliburton and Kellogg Brown and Root there to represent this country in Reconstruction. We are, as the taxpayers, are being screwed. And to say that I want oversight of that and have the right tell me that because I want oversight of how they're screwing me and my money, that all of a sudden it's like I'm un-American and I'm weak on defense, makes no sense whatsoever, because that money that's being wasted because of the amounts of money that we're being overcharged is weakening our defense. Getting our men and women sick is weakening our defense. Giving them bad food is weakening our defense. Keeping them out in the open to wait an hour in line to get shot at like they're in some bad turkey shoot is weakening our defense. And people on the right tell me that I'm the person who's weak on defense? Give me a break. As I said, if we just stick with the facts that have occurred with this war and with what is going on and how we are contracting it out, the right is completely wrong. This has to be discussed from this point of view. Like I said, I do take into the buildup of what took us there, but how about we just focus on what's going on now that we're there, and if we just stay focused on that, we, the progressive community, are right. We are being weakened by companies like Kellogg Brown and Root, Halliburton, Khaki, and Blackstar, who have no true loyalty to this country except to its dollar and to the administration that allows them to have those contracts. Here's some more from Iraq for Sale.
Halliburton Company billed taxpayers for its contract work in Iraq.
It is your money that's being used.
These contracts are managed under a system called Cost Plus, which is the opposite of trying to save money. It guarantees that everything that you buy will be paid back and reimbursed if it's seen as justified, and you'll be given a profit in addition.
A Cost Plus arrangement that critics say leaves little incentive to save. The more taxpayer dollars Halliburton spends, the more Halliburton makes.
Cost Plus encourages you to run up the cost of a program because you are going to get a percentage of the end result. And so there's no incentive to stay at Motel 6. Stay at the Ritz-Carlton in Qatar, folks.
The place that they chose for orientation in Kuwait was a huge resort set right on the ocean. Had, I think, 3 swimming pools.
So it was better than the Wyndham in Texas or the Ritz. It was fancied up.
Marble floors, mahogany woodwork. It was just beautiful.
They had sea-doos, jet skis they could use.
You could go and rent wave runners and go out and play in the water.
We were renting wave runners, and we got paid by the hour to do it. I was told this, don't question it, enjoy it.
You got brand new trucks over there, and there's not even oil filters.
So when the motor blows, what do? Buy a new truck and bill the government.
$75,000 truck, they wouldn't even have a spare tire to fit it. And we had to blow it up. And they didn't care Halliburton didn't, because the government's paying for it.
We knew that every day that a vehicle broke down, we would have to destroy it. And these are maybe $80,000 vehicles, maybe $100,000. You know, they're expensive trucks. We're burning fuel in front of Iraqi people. We're not really doing anything to help, and we just have to follow the orders.
As a truck driver in the mail department, they'd send me to these camps with one bag of mail. That's risking my life just to deliver one bag of mail.
Escort entire convoys where every flatbed truck was empty.
The allegations come from 12 truckers complaining that the company was wasting government money by running empty trucks on the convoys and billing the government for them.
It seems senseless to travel up and down the road and taking a chance of losing your life when there wasn't no purpose in it.
It is reportedly not a coincidence that Vice President Dick Cheney's old company got a huge contract to help rebuild Iraq. Time magazine said it has gotten a hold of a Pentagon email saying Cheney's office coordinated Halliburton's multi-billion dollar deal.
Not even a significant amendment has been passed, despite all the enormous amounts of fraud and waste and abuse.
There needs to be a special committee established, a bipartisan committee, to take a look at waste and fraud and abuse.
The amendment is not agreed to.
The amendment is not adopted.
And the Leahy Amendment is not agreed to.
So that's the clips from Iraq for Sale by Bob Greenwald. I really do suggest that you take the time to purchase this video, see it, share it. The message is incredible, and I think it's one we all need to hear, and it really should be where our focus is going to be. But this past couple of months, if we're going to talk about focus, has been one of incredible, just amazing flux in Iraq. The amount of insurgent violence, civilian deaths being recorded, about 650,000 plus, and American casualties have been just stunning and has put the government pretty much on notice as to what should or should not occur. We all know the catchphrases and other talking points that the administration and the right has had dealing with Iraq, and I'm not going to go over them ad nauseum in this particular podcast, but there were some things that happened this week, including the president being interviewed on George Stephanopoulos, that I think were very telling because of the way that they are trying to shape the argument now and how Iraq will go into the future. But there was one particular clip from Nightline that I found really interesting, and here it is, dealing with the Iraqi security forces.
U.S. military leaders have taken an extraordinary step. These national policemen, with their mismatched uniforms and boots, some are actually wearing dress shoes,
now we will walk into the crime scene,
have been pulled off patrol for training.
Bullet hole and a bullet hole.
Actually, it's retraining.
Leadership in battle.
Of all 20,000 men, about 10% of the Iraqi police force. General Dana Pittard is using an unfinished military base for the training.
You've got to take a unit out of the combat environment and train them to the next level.
I had to play you that clip because during the 2004 debates, John Kerry stated that the only way we could effectively train security forces was to take them outside of the combat area and allow them to be trained. This was vital and this was necessary, and this advice was not followed. And here it is now, late 2006, and they're finally starting to do this. I don't understand why it is that people wait so long to listen to good advice. You know, as I've previously said, I don't care whose idea it is. If it's going to help save lives or if it's going to help bring effective change, I'm not going to not use that idea just because it wasn't my own. And basically, that's been the game plan of this administration. If it is not their idea, they're not going to use it. And this even goes back to Clinton. So it's not surprising. And here you have Iraqi forces that are being trained and being ill-trained. They don't have the equipment that they need, including being out there in dress shoes. And then we wonder why it is that they can't effectively guard their own country. Well, they can't do it because they're not being trained outside that area. And for some reason, even though we can train our military in the span of weeks, they just can't do it for them. So I don't understand what's going on, but it obviously has to be changed. And see, going back to the president being on Stephanopoulos, it was an amazing interview. And if you heard it, you know, none of this is going to be new to you. But hopefully you're going to find some of what he has to say amazing, because I'm going to play some other stuff and make some commentary as to that particular interview. So here we go.
He could be right. There's certainly a stepped up level of violence, and we're heading into an election.
So they're trying to influence the elections?
Could be. I don't know. I don't have any intelligence that says that.
But what's...
Oh, man. So what I forgot to play beforehand was that it's dealing with... the violence that's going on is dealing with this being compared to the Tet Offensive in Vietnam. Probably the first real major comparison that's been made as to the war in Iraq with the war in Vietnam, and the president, in some ways, I think, probably going outside the talking points and admitting to this comparison. I don't know if he fully understands what it meant, and it's probably not best to go into that argument, but at least it's out there now. I find it really amazing that the president would say that because of our elections, they have stepped up their violence. Most of these people are fighting to stay alive. They're trying to do their best to get an occupying force out. And I don't mean to say that in a way that sounds like I'm, you know, romanticizing what they're saying. But, you know, most of us barely know that there's an election going on in about 2 weeks. So to imagine the people who are fighting for their lives and fighting for their homeland are actually going to take the real time to understand the American geopolitical system, I just find hilarious, because that is really stretching for an argument that the terrorists are trying to affect the election here by stepping up the violence. It's just ridiculous. The better probable reason that's been discussed is that it is Ramadan. There is some belief that fighting an invading force during that time gets you a better place in heaven. That's probably the more logical reason, but it's amazing to me that this is where they're going to stretch for this argument, is to say that they're trying to do it to make sure that the president loses control of the House and Senate, which to me is just ridiculous.
The fundamental question is, are we on our way to achieving a goal, which is an Iraq that can defend itself, sustain itself, and govern itself, and be an ally in the war on terror in the heart of the Middle East?
Well, if we're on our way, then obviously we have missed that way, because if we go back to the information I played from you about the Iraqi troops being under-trained and under-equipped, then they are not on their way to being able to be a country that can take care of itself. And this is a very hard thing for the president to try to sell. And the one thing that I found very interesting was that lately, the administration has been pushing forward the possibility of a timetable, the 18-month period that General Abizaid says the Iraqi army must try to meet. And you have to ask the obvious question, is this a timetable or isn't it? Because the president has railed against a time set, and this has been a long-standing position of the White House. So I'm very curious as to why it is that now they're willing to look for a timetable, because obviously, these people are not fully equipped and ready to take care of themselves, yet they now are pushing for it. And you have to ask yourself as well, is this because of our election? And it's funny that they can say that, well, the terrorists are trying to, and I use the word terrorists, you know, in the best way, not the best way possible. I use the word terrorists, it's like in the frame that it's being used because the president has used it, but he's saying that the terrorists are trying to, you know, impact the elections, but he won't say that the timetable they're trying to come up with, whether or not it's real or not, is not about influencing the election, so who knows. Here's the next clip from this week.
People voted for a government, and this government is going to have to perform to the will of the people, and that stands in stark contrast to the tyrant that preceded them, and to other tyrannical, and to the vision of those who would like to change the governments all throughout the Middle East.
Is the
government necessary to unite the country? The people voted for a government, and this government is going to have to perform to the will of the people, and that stands in stark contrast to the tyrant that preceded them, and to other tyrannical, and to the vision of those who would like to change the governments all throughout the Middle East.
Is the government performing up to your standards right now?
The government is, look, if the guy's been in office for about 4 months, Maliki, in my judgment, Maliki has got what it takes to lead a unity government. But what you're seeing is a new form of government actually beginning to evolve after years of tyranny. I'm patient. I'm not patient forever, and I'm not patient with dawdling, but I recognize the degree of difficulty of the task.
I think the real question to ask is he patient? Is he really aware of what's going to happen? Is he going to support Maliki? Because reports are starting to come out that Maliki has been asking for reassurances as to his own job security, and included within these reports is the possibility that the U.S. is going to set in a strong man to basically stop the militias and put together this government, which is, of course, just the ultimate shame in everything that's happened, because after fighting for democracy and, you know, this being one of the many reasons as to why it is we went to Iraq, even democracy has failed, and we are about to, if the reports are true, install a strong man to act as the ruler of Iraq. All of this after spending billions of dollars to remove the strong man that was already there. And that's just particularly stunning. To counter that, I'm going to play some clips from Jim, the NewsHour with Jim Lehrer, so you can hear another side of the failure that is now Iraq.
Might be some nominal central government, but the important point is that the central government right now doesn't govern anything. It doesn't govern the south, it doesn't govern Kurdistan, and it doesn't govern either the center or Baghdad. One problem with many of the strategies being discussed is that they basically involve an ultimatum to the Iraqi government to get its act together or else we'll withdraw. But the Iraqi government, even if it could get its act together, it wouldn't matter because it has no influence outside of the green zone, or only minimal influence.
So here we are with the president saying that he has no patience, or his patience may be tested, with a government that's been set up that has no real power. It's just amazing because, like I've mentioned before, billions of dollars were spent to set up this government, and people went out there to vote for a government that has no power. And what is now occurring is that this country that we fought to liberate is on the verge of absolute collapse. And it will, according to reports, be divided in some way, shape, or form. And if you're not sure or don't believe me, then listen to this.
2 weeks ago, Iraq's parliament passed a law that would allow the creation of autonomous Kurdish, Sunni, and Shiite regions, each controlling their own affairs.
Kurdistan in the north is already a de facto independent state. It has its own elected government. It has its own army. It flies its own flag. The Iraqi army is not allowed to go to Kurdistan. The Iraqi flag is banned there. The Shiite South is governed by the Shiite religious parties who enforce an Iranian-style Islamic law with militias. It's also not governed from Baghdad. Baghdad itself is the front line of a civil war divided between a Shiite East and a Sunni West. And the Sunni center is a battleground between the coalition and Sunni insurgents. So the country has already broken up, and this result is actually incorporated into the Iraqi constitution. The constitution creates a virtually powerless center. It doesn't even have the power to tax, and very strong regions that are allowed to have their own armies, where regional law is superior to central government law on almost all matters, and where the regions have substantial control of their own oil. So if that's the result that has been endorsed by the Iraqi people, I don't see why the United States should try to put the country back together.
And yet the overall argument that we've been hearing for years, even though this country has long ago decided that it needed to split up, is that we have been living under the illusion of a united Iraq that we were fighting to liberate. And it is a fantasy that has never, or at least will never, truly exist. So I find that particularly stunning, because this administration has been saying that we were going to stay the course. And lately, the president himself has been saying that he has never said that. Here is his quote from this week with George Stephanopoulos.
James Baker says that he's looking for something between cut and run and stay the course.
We've never been stay the course, George. We will complete the mission. We will do our job and help achieve the goal, but we're constantly adjusting to tactics.
And that's
constantly.
Exactly. Here's what I don't get.
So there it is, our president saying he's never said stay the course. Or has he?
That's what we're saying now, is the president has never
said... We will stay the course.
Republicans and recording devices, not so much.
No.
Of course, thanks to Stephanie Miller for recording all those times he said stay the course, because it's always good to catch them when they're not really saying what they mean and catching them in their little lies. But overall, the policy has failed. They are now trying to back out of it, and they can't because their own words have caught them. Their own policies are falling around them, and they will affect us for years, if not decades, and possible generations. And we need to hold them accountable, because this war is his. It's his legacy. It's what he wanted. And he has pushed it on to the American public, and he has pushed it on to our fighting men and women, and he has sent them ill-prepared, under-equipped, and through the use of private contractors, has put their safety, their health, and the lives of our soldiers and civilians at risk. And that is where this president should be held accountable. That is where this policy has been wrong. And let's focus on that, because that is where, no matter what, the argument holds that Iraq is a huge mistake and our government needs to be held accountable. Let's see. In a change of pace, let's see, next week I'll be talking a little bit more about the upcoming elections, and including some of the amendments that are coming up in California. But I bet you didn't know, I have little spies here and there, people who are able to find out real information as to what's going on. And, believe you me, found a way to get the next negative ad that's going to come out against Prop 87. And I thought you'd like to hear it, because I think it's really telling. Environmentalists want you to believe that Prop 87 will clean the air, reduce greenhouse gases, and slow global warming. But here's what they're not telling you. Listen to these hard-working Americans.
Alternative fuels cost money. I can't even afford regular gas.
Biofuels stink. Literally, can't you smell that?
Solar power? What if it rains?
I like global warming. It helps my arthritis.
Look at that Prius.
I'm not paying more for gas. They just raised prices at Starbucks.
Can't you smell that? I think it's Thai food.
Drill up north. It's not like anyone goes there.
Keep it warm. My knees hurt.
A Prius? What chick is gonna get near a Prius?
You know, a polar bear took my baby. I say let him drown.
Damn it! Turn up the heat!
Oh man, it smells like Thai food and grease farts. Seriously, how am I supposed to get laid in a Prius?
If Prop 87 is bad for them, isn't it bad for you? Vote no on Prop 87. Paid for by Chevron and every major oil company that will lose their shirts should Prop 87 pass. Well, as always, it's time to end this week's podcast with the What a Weenie Award. This week's What a Weenie was actually way too easy for me. Just on who he is alone, he is almost an automatic weenie. But this award goes to Rush Limbaugh. This week, Rush Limbaugh decided to focus his ire on Michael J. Fox and an ad he did for Claire McCaskill, the Democratic candidate in Missouri, supporting the need for stem cell research. Here's what the ad by Michael J. Fox says.
Stem cell research offers hope to millions of Americans with diseases like diabetes, Alzheimer's, and Parkinson's. But George Bush and Michael Steele would put limits on the most promising stem cell research. Fortunately, Marylanders have a chance to vote for Ben Cardin. Cardin fully supports life-saving stem cell research. It's why I support Ben Cardin. And with so much at stake, I respectfully ask you to do the same.
Okay, I apologize. It was Ben Cardin, not Claire McCaskill. What you don't see by hearing that ad is the effect that the ravages of Parkinson's has done to Michael J. Fox. But here is what Rush Limbaugh had to say about it.
I must share this. I have gotten a plethora of emails from people saying Michael J. Fox has admitted in interviews that he goes off his medication for Parkinson's disease when he appears before Congress or other groups as a means of illustrating the ravages of the disease. So lest there be any misunderstanding, we talked about a half hour ago of the commercial that's running for Claire McCaskill featuring Michael J. Fox, and now what appears to be when he's off his meds. And I'd never seen him this way. I stated when I saw the ad, was commenting to you about it, that he's either off his medication or acting. He is an actor, after all. Started hearing from people that, oh no, I've seen him on TV this way. This is how the disease has affected him when he's not on his medications. Then the emails started coming in. He's admitted not to taking them in certain circumstances so as to illustrate how the disease affects people. All of which I understand, and I'm not even critical of that. Parkinson's disease is hideous. Let me just stress once again in what I said in closing this out that I think this is exploitative in a way that it's unbecoming either Claire McCaskill or Michael J. Fox.
You know, I'll tell you what's exploitative. Making your maid go buy your illegal OxyContin. That's exploitative. Having the ACLU defend your sorry behind and then publicly denouncing them. That's exploitative. You know, the last person in the world who should be talking about exploitation is Rush Limbaugh. He's been arrested and pleaded out of a charge for possession of illegal prescription medication, the OxyContin that he had his maid buy for him. You know, it's an addiction that was so bad he exploited his body to the point of losing his hearing. He was also arrested this year for having illegally gained prescription Viagra that was seized on his return from the Dominican Republic. You know, Rush, you went fishing with the guys. What did you need the Viagra for? Either you and your guy friends get very friendly, or you use the Viagra for bait. Or is it that the Dominican Republic is notorious for its prostitution, especially prostitution of young girls? Talk about exploitation. No, the real exploitation is in deceiving your listeners that you are a moral and righteous person that knows what is best for this country to the point of exploiting their trust on the issue of stem cell research. Stem cell research holds the potential to cure countless diseases, including Parkinson's. But you don't add that to the real discourse by talking about the pros and cons of stem cell research. No, you just try to impugn the character of a man crying out for a cure for himself and others. And that is exploitation of the worst kind. To inflate your own self-worth at the sake of another's pain is true exploitation. And that is why you are getting this week's What a Weenie Award. So that's going to be it for podcast number 9 of Indirect Democracy. If you have any questions or comments you'd like to send them in, please email them to david@indirectdemocracy.com. I urge you to go to the website for the Progressive Podcast Network and click on their links, listen to some of those podcasters, get in on the forum. Of course, I would be remiss if I did not thank Matt Bloodwell and the guys at Megaphone for allowing me to use their music, Not Your Enemy, from the album For Crying Out Loud. That album and their music is available through their websites at www.megaphonemusic.net and at their MySpace page, which is www.myspace.com/megaphone. Have a little trouble finishing out for today. You can also get their music through iTunes. I want to thank you all again for taking the time to listen. Take care of yourself. I look forward to seeing you next week. Bye for now. Yeah. John Kerry took my shoe.